Welcome to Polycast, the official podcast of a Pol Civilization site. I'm Imran Siddiqui, known as Imran Siddiqui on the forums, of course. And I'm here with Daniel Quick, known as Dan Q on the forums. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Makalula.
Hello.
And Wouter Snyders, known as Lucutus on our forums.
Hi.
Polycast would like to give our users a service, unlike the rest of what you're going to hear. Advanced etiquette. Reply to all. If you are one of two or more recipients to an email, and you know from that email who the other recipients are, as a general rule, please use the reply to all option in your mail client or web interface. If your response is relevant to everyone, this can increase the efficiency of your communication, avoiding unnecessary forwards or outright confusion. But of course, if I sent out a message to, say, Mackie, Wouter, and Imran, and say one of them wanted to say something not so nice about me, they probably shouldn't send it back to everybody.
I'm guessing someone just sent you some email you wish you didn't get.
Maybe. Coming up in the modcast, we'll look at what scenarios to include in the second Civilization IV expansion pack, and how our co-hosts choose what leader traits to look for when setting up a game. Former Call to Power 2 modder, present-day game designer, and Firaxis Games Civ 4 tester Dale Kent is the first guest in our interview segment as we bring you part one of two of that discussion. In the mailbag, we'll answer a poll and visitor emails about how to reacquire activation codes for a downloadable copy of Civ 4, demystify the C-Box in Civ 3's city view screen, and Lighthouse Wonder effects on Trey Reams in both Civ 1 and Civ 2. First, what's been making news in the Civ community?
Stardock has announced that it is pushing back the release date for the Galactic Civilizations 2 expansion pack, Dark Avatar, to February 2007. Among the new features are mega events, super unique race abilities, a visual makeover, and a streamlined tech tree.
Well, this is because they're adding more stuff, you know, and not just, it's Christmas, I want a vacation. Or maybe that is what it is, but...
Yeah, you know, I think it's good for the consumer to wait until those suggestions that the community has made, Stardock is willing and able to put in and has the time to do so, and do so right. Avoid patches or, as Brad noted, even a second expansion farther down the road. And, you know, I'm not that familiar with Gal Civ 2's modding community as Civ 4's, although that's not always saying a lot, but still, from what I understand, the game is customizable. Gal Civ 2 is customizable, though not as comprehensively as Civ 4. There are plenty of other works to keep players busy, including, I saw a mention on GalCiv2.com about a Babylon 5 conversion. Unofficial, of course, because of, you know, copyright and all that.
And it was still put on the first page. I think they can still get into trouble for that, but...
If no one says anything, maybe they won't notice it.
Oops. Too late.
Oh.
Oh, no.
We've doomed it.
We're sorry.
Oh, well.
Everyone will play Good Little Canadian. We're sorry. You know, it's also a bit of a gamble for Stardock in inferring that they're, at least I'm getting their intention to release one expansion for Gal Civ 2, as opposed to another, in terms of money. I mean, a person X is willing to buy both expansions as they are released, could have a lower price for each add-on and still make more money, you know, like $19.95 times 2 instead of $29.95 times 1. But I think it may increase the profile and overall sales, where if there is something in it for everyone, it may attract a broader base of those who bought Gal Civ 2, perhaps even those who didn't buy the base game, to purchase it and the expansion at the same time.
That's true. And, I mean, just because they're releasing a huge one doesn't mean that they can reverse course, you know, sometime next year and say, why don't we do another one as well? So, I mean, you know, just because they said they're, you know, didn't say they're going to do two of them and just combine them into one doesn't mean they're going to do not going to do another one. Expansion pack.
That's right. Nothing's set in stone here. And indeed, in a related journal entry on the game's official website, GalCiv2.com, Brad says, there, quote, there really isn't a good business justification. Believe me, we've tried to come up with a plausible marketing or publishing reason to add more features to the expansion, but it always come back to the same answer. Because we wanted to, unquote. And some people might say, that seems kind of an interesting position to take. Where is this coming from? Well, Stardock isn't your typical game developer publisher. Yes, they did not publish the original Gal Civ. That was with Strategy First, and they had lots of fun with that company, I think, going a little bankrupt and kind of not getting the money that, you know, they deserved for that. So they published Galsif 2 themselves. But, I mean, Stardock did release an expansion pack for the original Galsif for free. That was the first one. And Stardock is also not just a games publisher. Brad has said before that games is about a quarter of their business. Some people might say, you know, it's kind of a risk. You know, not going to be easy to target maybe hardcore extreme players on either side if you're trying to have something in a little bit for everyone. But, you know, if you're balancing whatever elements you're putting in there, you know, test for compatibility, make sure it's a little challenging but still practical and fun, I think it's win-win for everyone.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. I agree.
And did we notice that mega events are one of the new features being added?
I did.
Stardock, how did you get hold of one of our earlier pilots? How did you do that? Come on!
I have eyes and ears in every place.
All right, which one of you is the mole?
Well, what I have to gain?
Free copies of Galsif?
She has a point. You can never have too many free copies of Galsif.
That's true.
I've been thinking about building a fort with them in my backyard. It's not going to do very well when it starts to rain or snow, but...
No, well...
Hey, it'll be shiny. I like shiny things. Where? Oh, I just psyched myself out. Man.
You're talented.
I'm doing that. Brad also notes in a journal entry mentioned earlier that this, along with some unique features for each civilization, will be added. You know, a la Civ's traits, are the two most time-consuming ones to elements. So these unique features and mega events, that includes balancing and writing AI. So I think Brad's giving himself a lot of work because from what I understand, Brad did a lot of the AI coding. Please ensure that the AI knows how to take advantage of these new features so you don't end up with a situation like in, oh, I don't know, Civ 3, where until Conquest are there about the AI didn't really seem to know how to build or exercise military potential or...
Like, you know, an army?
Yes, an army, a navy, and an air force. What you don't understand, I could spell this backwards for you. Okay. As long as the AI can take advantage of these, perhaps for a player like me, I wouldn't want the AI to take advantage of those because that could be really hard, but, you know, for most people.
Who want a challenge.
The rest of us.
Yes. And I guess they're also coming out with a streamlined technology tree. I guess there's been some criticism about the tech tree with Galsif 2 as being too unwieldy and uninspired, such as Laser 1, Laser 2. Laser 3 and Laser 4.
Oh, well, let's see you think up different names for everything.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Laser 1, 2, 3, 4, that's kind of neat. You might want to have tried Laser 4, 3, 2, 1. That could have also been cool, but okay, you know, teach their own. So now we're going to have this concept of milestones. So where you research weapons, you would see lasers, and then when you complete that research, you would hit multiple milestones. Each milestone would give you the same kind of benefit as you got from, say, Laser 3, which is new components, but on the research screen, what you see is the laser technology tree slowly being filled up.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's what I need in my life, more milestones.
Why not live through vicariously through a game? There you go.
Ooh.
Mm.
And we're going to end up with more technologies in total. Who doesn't want more technologies? Because, I mean, they're so helpful right now. You know, we have our paperless society, and we're so much more efficient and so much more relaxed.
Paperless,
right?
Paperless? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Dan does not use paper anymore.
Maybe that's how they do it in Canada.
We don't
down
use...
Here, I still get my bills in paper.
Uh-oh.
We don't use paper anymore for what exactly? What kind of paper are we talking about here?
I'm not specifying.
And I saw the Stardock employee who goes by the handle of Cairo confirmed on Galsif2.com that there is a gold edition.
Ooh. What are you,
coming next February. Although I guess I should say that he confirmed there's a gold edition, but he wouldn't confirm the date that GameSpot has to specify, which is February 2007.
Now, what is inset gold edition?
It will replace Galsif 2 at retail. It will combine Galsif 2 and the Dark Avatar expansion, but the only way to get the expansion itself will be by directly through Stardock. And if they stay consistent with what they've been saying before about Dark Avatar, it will only be available in a downloadable form through their TotalGaming.net service. And finally, I see Brad says he hangs out on a lot of forums. He doesn't specify what forums.
He's stalking you, Dan.
No, I think so, but maybe this is a good thing because he's driving traffic. He's looking at ads. No Dota Polt and a second on his list right after the official Galciv 2 forums, right? Right?
Sure, Dan.
I mean, a Polton is at the beginning of the alphabet. Everybody organizes things alphabetically. Now you know why we called it a Polton. We rule the alphabet. Woo! Alphabet.
So nefarious. So nefarious.
A digital copyright protection company has conducted a survey that found, quote-unquote, only 28% of consumers avoid protecting games, but Stardock Chief Executive Officer Brad Wardell tells Next Gen why he questions the thoroughness of the study.
Well, I think it's significant. I mean, you know, they say only 28% of consumers avoid protected games. You know, that's a fairly decent percentage. It's not something to be poo-pooed over, and I think Brad Wardell has it right that, you know, that's a decent amount of people.
Yes, isn't it interesting that the company behind this survey, ECD Systems, which develops anti-piracy and copy protection software, conducted this survey, published the results, and all of the percentages that they seem to indicate tend to, I don't know, support their position. Which, also interesting, has anybody visited ECD Systems' website?
No.
I don't say that I have.
I have. Guess what's not on there? This survey! It's so important, and it's talked about elsewhere, but not on ECD's website? Interesting. Interesting. And Brad cites two important missing factors from the data. Number one, does the presence of CD copy protection make someone less likely to purchase the game? And two, what percentage of gamers end up buying a game because CD copy protection thwarted their piracy efforts? For me, the second question is more important, I guess because it's more quantifiable. You know, I agree with Brad in that the number of people who end up buying the game due to being thwarted by copy protection ought to be far less than the number of buyers lost to the presence of copy protection. Haven't seen anything to substantiate this besides the argument itself, which I like. I think those are important questions, but how are we really going to answer it other than, you know, he said, she said, it said?
Yeah. Yeah, and I doubt the people who are trying to pirate games are going to line up for a survey and answer it.
That's kind of the key thing, yes.
You know, I would also like to know how this study was conducted. It's just like oftentimes with political polls, for example. So-and-so is in such a lead with blah, 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 blah. You know, this percentage is considered right 19 times out of 20 or whatever. What about the time frame? When was this survey conducted? Demographics. Where are you talking to these people? Where do they live? What are their ages? How many people did you talk to? You know, because you can conduct a survey and come up with 28%, 15%, 80%, you know, with 10 people. It is possible. Especially, you know, you could get like 20, I think, well, if you got 10 people, how do you get 28%? Well, you could say someone was kind of convinced, so they counted as like 8/10 of a yes or something. I don't know what they're doing. ECD's survey supports their position quite strongly, so one other important thing to know is how the questions were worded.
Of course. And even then, even, you know, with all their advantages, still 28% of people said, well, I'm turned off by copy-protected games, or copyright-protected games. So, I mean, that's an interesting number right there. I mean, because they came up with all the questions, they could, you know, probably skew it whatever way they wanted to, and still a bunch of people said, well, I don't like dealing with all this junk.
And there's a bunch of people that have had to deal with Valve and Steam.
Yeah, that's a mess.
And, you know, the study also seemed to just focus on copy protection on computer games. What happened to other software? I realize computer games is like a billion-dollar-plus industry. Okay, with video games thrown in, they're not just computer games. Don't get me started on consoles. We'll never leave. But, well, I suppose you guys could all leave and I could still be talking. But probably do that anyway, but...
That's what happens on a regular basis, doesn't it?
And now Dad's left us alone.
You heard my feelings.
If I had a nickel for every time I thought that.
You'd have 15 cents?
That's enough to start a retirement fund, isn't it? All I have to do is live for 600 or 700 years.
Online version of the newspaper The Washington Post just published an interview with Timothy McCracken, the quality assurance manager at Firaxis Games. McCracken, who calls himself the company's chief deficiency officer, talks about what his job entails, especially his responsibilities for the upcoming game Sid Meier's Railroads. Woo, railroads. I know, I know.
He's a bug hunter without the fear of scratches and bites. He's a bug hunter. Woo! If you use that, I want some royalties. Royalties. And if you're listening and wondering why we're laughing, it's because I've said it before, but not that you would know that yet. Do you like mystery? Do you like that? Is that good for you? I had an opportunity to meet Tim in person during my Firaxis tour where with Marco. Yeah, I guess Marcos had a chance to meet him as well, but, you know, I like talking about me. And
no. I never noticed.
You know, I just thought I'd point that out in case somebody was like, what? Dan likes talking about himself? Since when? You must be new. You see Tim on camera discussing his job. Tim helped make Marcos and I feel at home in this environment, referred to the article as the pit. I thought the article was an enjoyable read. I don't know if you guys thought.
Yeah, well, it mostly was a repeat of what was already in a Firaxis podcast. But yeah, it was still interesting to read, I guess.
Yeah, it was interesting to see, you know, how many bugs they'd already identified. And
yeah, that was interesting. I agree. That was new.
Just to see, you know, what they have to deal with on a regular basis. I know a lot of people, whenever a game comes out, say, they didn't do any testing at all. Like, what's wrong with these people? And just to show that, well, there's a lot of stuff they find and polish up for the game before they actually ship it out. I know some people are skeptical and wondering if we're just trying to puff up these people. And, you know, really, they don't do any work whatsoever. But I think they do probably do a little bit.
Just a little.
Just a tiny bit.
And there's a comment about they don't so much play the game as they test the game.
Mm.
I hope that once they're entirely through the bug testing process, that Tim and others in quality assurance can actually play the game and enjoy it. I don't know if that's possible, because you've looked at it for so long, not as a game, but as something to fix.
Well, if you set it aside for 6 months or something like that and come back to it, then it's probably fun. Yeah. But if they try to play it right after they get finished, they're probably like, oh, not that again.
Woo, amnesia. And I saw that fixing one bug sometimes creates a new one. Wouter, can you relate, such as in designing that Desert Dwarf scenario?
Yes, I think anyone who's ever programmed can relate to that.
And with Halloween just around the corner, it seems fitting that Tim's suggestion, turning the pit into a haunted house for Firaxis employees' kids, loosely based on the popular computer game World of Warcraft. Mac, I know you might be confused what I'm talking about. It's World of Warcraft, actually, but I thought I'd help you out.
Yeah, I know what it is.
Okay, I wasn't sure. I didn't want you to feel left out or anything.
I, of all people, would know what it is.
I think my favorite part is where they say colleagues have been known to close their office doors when Tim comes around. Tempers flare. Toy weapons have been brandished. If by toy weapons they're referring to some of those train models Marcos and I saw during our tour, ouch. That could leave a mark.
Yikes.
Hopefully if someone gets thrown multiple toys, hopefully at least they alternate what part of their body they throw it at. You know, not at the head anymore. Go for the stomach.
Maybe we should send him a case of Nerf bats.
We're doing a public service.
No more bruises.
Civilization IV Warlords was nominated for a BAFTA award in the category Strategy. Last week, the winners were announced, and the awards handed out as part of the London Game Summit. But Warlords fell outside the prizes. The award for Best Strategy Title of 2006 instead went to Rise and Fall, Civilizations at War by Midway Games. See the BAFTA website for a full listing of winners and nominees of all 18 categories.
Well, what did I say in a as-of-yet-unreleased pilot of Polycast? Who did I say should win because of the BAFTA qualification process?
Oh, Rise and Fall.
I'm going back to this.
Oh.
Rise and Fall, Civilizations at War, you owe me. I predicted it.
We didn't bet anything, so we don't owe you anything.
You know what probably happened? They probably already awarded it, and Dan just read that and did a news item for, look at the nominees.
You give me too much credit. And when I said you need to give me credit, I wasn't necessarily talking to you, Mackie, or Wouter, or Imran. You guys are not the center of the universe.
What? I didn't get that memo.
Everybody knows it's me, but that's beside the point. No, wait. Now, we didn't notice in preparation for that pilot where we originally talked about the BAFTA war process, but there was another Civ title in the running. Did you see that at the very bottom of the page? The handheld Civ title on the N-Gage was in the running.
Ooh.
For the very self-important sounding The Gamers Award. Excuse me. Oh, touch of something there.
Was that a BAFTA award in your throat?
I think so. And guess who sponsored the category?
N-Gage.
N-Gage. Even though N-Gage sponsored it, the Civ title still didn't win.
Before the mobile game won. Ooh. I think they all might have been N-Gage titles.
It could very well have been. I thought about doing some research on it.
But then you decided it wasn't worth it.
Yeah. I wasn't too happy to see 24 the mobile win game, but it's better than, you know, like, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Can that show not die along with Survivor? Please. Please go away. It's everywhere.
Not before they
free up an hour for better TV on Thursday nights.
Not until they Survivor put Dan on there.
I'd watch that.
That sounds like a good idea. I could kill it in one fell swoop. I am the cure. You are the disease. Survivor, you breed like rabbits. Oh, anyway. But what I would have liked to have seen, and this doesn't just apply to BAFTA, but shame in not posting the percentage of the votes that each received and the total number of votes.
Well, that's because it
you
was
know,
fixed.
To help place... Oh! Yeah. Well, we could fix the percentages, too. Look at that. 24 the mobile game that got 99.9% of the votes. And look, 10 people voted. Wow! That's nifty.
I want to see those percentages for the Oscars. Sometimes they come out with the winners, and I'm like, what the hell?
It's not about what you are or what you know. It's who you know. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially for this nominations. Because what I noticed, and I didn't notice this last time, some of the best games of this year aren't even nominated. I mean, for example, Gelsif 2, Heroes of... what's that game? That RTS? I wrote it down. Company of Heroes?
Oh, yeah, because you said Heroes of, and I was just thinking of Heroes of Might and Magic, and I thought, that's not the right genre.
That's not the right genre, no. But I think it's odd. Those are the three best games of this year, according to GameRanking.com, and I think also according to GameSpot, and none of them are nominated. I think that's kind of odd.
They already know they're winners. See? That must be it.
And the awards shows are, at least for games, are usually a little bit behind. They're not so much
Gelsif
up on it.
2 and Rise of Legends were 6 months old. I mean, Company of Heroes, I could kind of see.
Well,
and at the same time, I mean, Medieval 2 Total War is on the list, and that's not even released yet. How do you give that game an award?
Oh. I'm guessing some intern at BAFTA just surfed on the internet and said, ooh, that looks good. I'm going to put that on there. And that one, yeah.
Exactly. I like that one. And I mean, come on, they have to get Age of Kings in there.
Yeah, that's good. What are the biggest franchises in strategy? Age of Empires, Civilization, and Total War. Well, let's nominate those games. And then they threw in two oddballs. I mean, Football Manager and Ghost Recon, not really obvious choices.
I'm surprised.
Just to throw us off.
Yeah. See, look, now we're talking about it, right?
Yeah, that's kind of the point.
Yes, we've legitimated you, BAFTA.
Damn.
With your horrible picks.
There, that can be their new tagline for next year. Our awards are so horrible, you've just got to know who wins.
Sid Meier sat down for an extensive interview with Czech News about his view of gaming in general and his own experiences with game playing and game development in particular. He talks about how he got into game development, which games he enjoys playing himself, and what type of games and for what platforms he'll be developing in the future. He discusses the future of gaming, online and offline, game ratings, the social effects of his games, his involvement in developing Firaxis titles, why his name prefaces his titles, and finally answers a question that many fans have been wanting an answer to: what are the chances of there ever being a sequel to Alpha Centauri? Sid's response: Electronic Arts owns the rights to Alpha Centauri, so you'll have to talk to them.
Love his response about failure. That was hilarious.
I was interested by the fact that his favorite games, two of them seem to be real-time strategy games. The other one's Gran Turismo 3. Not a lot of turn-based strategy or something like that. And the other thing is, he was interested in a massively multiplayer
game. Yeah, that was interesting.
Has an idea for
it. Says he has some ideas from that. So I'm like,
World of Sims.
First time he's brought it up either, so.
Yeah, it's the second time recently. I mean, it's not the first time overall, but I mean, recently it's a couple of different times, I think.
World of Civilization. There you go.
Ooh, I'd play that.
Yeah, so the fact that he's mentioned it again could mean everything. Or nothing.
How about World of Pirates?
World of Pirates.
That would be fun.
There you go. You could.
Wait, isn't that what the internet is?
Not the same kind of pirates.
Oh, okay.
And he seems to like console development. So he's very fond of the Xbox Live Arcade and things like that. And I don't know, you might see a Firaxis game being pushed on that at some point in the future if they branch out.
I think you get Pirates on the Xbox.
Yes.
Yeah. I forgive you, Sid.
Come on. Console gamers and PC people need to unite here. Come on.
Stop the violence. Can't we all get along?
Exactly. We're all gamers.
Of course we can all get along if console gamers put down their consoles and start playing games on the PC. The solution is simple.
It's nice to know that he's still in the actual process with the code, though, as well. You know, hands-on writing and designing and everything.
That is comforting.
Of course, the question is, you know, what else is he involved in? Because, you know, it always seems to be there's these other people that are in charge of running, you know, or programming and putting all the stuff in these games. You wonder what type of ideas he's coming up with. I mean, there was that Dinosaurs game that was canceled. And there was the golf game that was pretty fun. Yeah. You wonder what's coming up next from the pike. I mean, there's only so much... what's next? Civ 4, Alpha Centauri 2, you know, there's got to be something new that Sid wants to do. I don't think he's very much into the sequels, or sequelitis.
Well, in the case of Alpha Centauri, we have to talk to Electronic Arts.
Well, that's true.
It's just like talking to a brick wall.
Yeah.
Okay, welcome to this week's Modcast, in which we discuss hot issues in forums.
First, what scenarios to include in the second Civilization IV expansion pack?
All right. Well, on the thread there were some, or on the poll on the thread, there were some interesting ideas. I don't know how well an epic World War II one would work, but if they could actually get it to work, that would be really, really cool. Especially if, that were done kind of, with a multiplayer or something like that.
I guess I'm going to have to disagree. No more World War scenarios, please.
But what about the first one?
No.
Age of Discover? Oh,
the first poll item, yes.
Oh, you're saying World War II is kind of done to death and you want to see World War I instead?
No, both. No more. I know it was mostly World War II, but let's move on from the World Wars. For now.
The one I really like is Polymer versus CFC. Only we get nukes, though.
Now that would be an interesting one to try and implement.
Nature Discovery looks like an interesting idea, but then Dale has a really good mod of that, so, you know.
It's true.
No?
Yeah.
There's some good reference material.
Something crusader.
Well, that falling with... No, that's ancient Middle East.
Yeah.
Oh, but that would be interesting. The Babylonians, Sumerians, and everybody else in there. The cradle of civilization.
I think the 30 Years' War would be kind of fun, too. With all... And, you know, you'd have to, you know, add in different religions and everything. But that would be fun.
And I wouldn't have thought of it, but colonization of Africa would also be interesting. Perhaps we could go a little on the wild side and add colonization of Antarctica, too, you know? Be a little futuristic. Ooh! You thought Canada was cold. You take Antarctica. No, you! No, you! I insist. No, I insist.
The vast penguin armies are barbarians.
Penguin barbarians.
We will waddle our way to victory. As for ancient Middle East, that's a pretty broad category, I think, in terms of geography and time. I think if we could narrow it down a bit and deal with perhaps items one by one, that would be more practical.
That's true. And, when, you know, how far does ancient go to? That's another thing. I mean, do we consider, say, you know, the rise of Islam to be ancient?
I don't think that's really ancient anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
I think that's where the medieval era starts, with invention is not the right word, but with the invention of Islam. Anything before that, I think, would qualify as ancient.
Okay.
But that's still a huge period. That's like 4,000 years right there.
Oh, what's 4,000 years between friends? And speaking of friends and fun, not that this is a great segue, but, you know, what can we do? Japan is always fun, but this time give us the Portuguese.
That's a scenario?
I was like, what?
There's a what?
Are we conducting another poll within a poll? That's very sneaky.
It's subliminal messaging.
Oh, maybe someone was doing copy and pasting, I don't know, between a couple of threads, and we got our threads crossed.
Perhaps so. It would depend on if someone actually goes to the Civ4 General Forums to point this out.
Are you volunteering?
No. Okay. I said among us here. Do you play the Civ same or random? Well, not random. I don't play the same one. I just select different ones that I haven't played before, just to see, you know, what they're all about. And, you know, sometimes I select them based on, you know, their traits or whatnot. But usually I just like to pick one that I haven't played before. Perhaps it's just merely a factor of new city names and how cool that is. But, you know, I just like things to be fresh and new and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the best traits can be very dependent not only on your playstyle, but, you know, also more on your difficulty level, although not that I really know that much about difficulty levels other than they exist. Oh, I got a touch of that BAFTA again. Man, that keeps coming back up. Oh. But if I had to choose two traits, I would go with creative and expansive. Creative's cultural benefit is particularly helpful at the start, and who could not love expansive? Close second, nice health bonus, particularly on those wet and wild.
Well, this is where you not knowing about difficulty levels comes in, because later on, expansive isn't so great because your happy cap is so low. You get like three people in the city, and all of a sudden, we hate you! So it doesn't help if I have extra room for people with health. They can all hate me, and I have to build a bunch of temples and cathedrals and what have you.
But people hate me anyway, so I really don't see the problem.
That's true.
Me, I tend to do random when I'm about to go to another higher difficulty level. So I know that at that level that I'm playing currently, I can handle whatever it throws at me. But then when I start in a new level, I'll do something kind of cheesy like pick Rome, which is so easy to play with, and sort of get my feet wet in that level.
Yeah, I do the same as Imran. I just pick different ones every time, depending on which I've tried before and which I haven't, and what I feel like, and blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. So what's everyone's least favorite trait, then? I mean, obviously, you know, doing this kind of going random, so you've had a sampling of every one. What's the least favorite? Oh, I have twisted your mind. Least favorite? Who knew?
Because the answer is it depends on the game and the map.
Yeah, they all have their uses.
Yeah, if you were playing on if you try to stack the odds against yourself and play it on a really rocky or arid map, then you actually might like expansive, you know? And in some cases, if you're trying to play a peaceful builder game, it doesn't help you to have aggressive.
That's true.
This is starting to sound like strategy. I'm not really sure where that comes into play.
What? Strategy game with strategy? Oh my gosh.
Wait, who said it was a strategy game?
It says right here on the box.
You have a box.
Oh, you believe everything you read on a box, huh? Yeah, there you go.
Welcome to our first interview. I'm here with Maki.
Hello.
Today we're interviewing someone who mo- most of our listeners will at least have heard of. He's a longtime modder who started out his career in the Call to Power 2 community, where he created the official Apolloton pack, the Diplomods, World of War, Ages of Man, which is not related to Stan Karpinski's unofficial sequel. And he provided code for other projects such as the Medieval Mod and Cradle of Civilizations. He then outgrew the modding community and started designing his own games, such as Empires, a computer version of the board game Here There Be Dragons, designed by Velocirix. And he worked as programmer on Candlebray, another project by Velocirix. And in early 2005, he joined Firaxis' testing team for Civ 4, and he ended up designing the Desert War scenario that shipped with the original game. He also made Dale's Combat mod for that game, which is quite a big overhaul of the combat in the game, and the Age of Discovery scenario, which is loosely based on the classic game Colonization. And he's also been a tester on Civ City Rome and some other projects that he refuses to tell me about because of silly little excuses such as non-disclosure agreements. Go figure that one out. I am, of course, talking about none other than Dale Kent, known on the forum simply as Dale. Hi, Dale.
Hi, guys. Hi, everyone out there.
Nice to talk to you, finally. We've known each other for a while.
Well, about 6 years now, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that. Okay, so let's get this interview started. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself in real life? Where are you from? I detect a faint accent. What do you do for a living?
Yeah, that definitely kind of an accent here. I'm an Australian. For those Americans, that's Australian. grew up in a little town called Melbourne. Yeah, little town, about 4 million people.
I think I've heard of that.
Yeah, probably, just recently with the Commonwealth Games and Formula One and cricket.
I'm not so much in cricket. But
yeah, but grew up in Melbourne all my life, been here, well, apart from 1 year when I spent in Canada. And as for my job, I'm in IT. I'm currently working for Cadbury's, actually, as a desktop support engineer. And basically for the last 6-8 months, I've been just trying to break into the games industry. And that's in a nutshell.
Okay, cool. And why were you delayed today?
I was actually delayed today because my son is 8 months and he's teething. And
ouch.
It's very time-consuming at the moment, so... Yeah, so that's why I was a couple of hours late.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's allowed for that.
So what's being a father?
Oh, it's a big shock to the system, let me tell you. I had a lot of freedom, now I have none. So it's very, very big change.
Yeah, I can imagine, though not from
experience.
But one for
the best.
I'm sure it is. So, how did you get into Civ?
Well, back
into
in the 80s, I had a Commodore 64, and I had a few friends at school that also had Commodore 64s. And if there's any officials out there, please cover your ears, but we used to just share games around.
I think so.
And I think 20 years covers the... statutory declaration, doesn't it? But
I hope so.
One of those little games was actually Civ 1, and that's how I got into it to start with and played it to death. And also, other ones around that time from Sid, like Pirates and Railroad Tycoon, all the old favorites.
Yeah.
And the actual modding, well, that really started for me with Call to Power 2 back in, 2000, end of 2000, I think it was.
Yeah, late 2000.
Yeah, because I got the game, before I found Apolloton, and I wanted to do some things with the game, but I didn't know where to start, so I went on to Google, and, that is how I found Apolloton, and, joined you guys.
Cool.
Yay, Google.
Yeah.
Bring us more cool people.
Would be me. Yep. So why did you mod the game? Was there anything you didn't like it, or what was your motivation for that?
I suppose my main motivation for it was the lack of initial AI diplomacy. Like when Call to Power 2 first came out, there was really only human AI diplomacy, and I felt that was a bit stupid that it was left out. So what I did was I tried to force AI diplomacy, of course, with Diplomod, and you know, from there it just escalated into a full-scale rewrite of the original game, becoming the Apollotan pack. But mostly it was the diplomacy. I wanted to balance a bit more the units that were there, fix a lot of the bugs that we could get to either through scripting or, you know, adding in more workarounds than you can poke a stick at.
Yep, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, but that was basically my motivation into getting into modding for the game.
Okay, cool.
So are you still doing the modding for that today, or do you think there's going to be room for more development of that?
With Call to Power 2?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not actually involved with Call to Power 2 anymore. I've moved on from that game. Like at the moment, I've just finished two mods for Civ 4, and I'm sort of taking a bit of a quiet break at the moment.
Okay, well, if you look back at your Call to Power time, how do you feel about it?
I had a lot of fun doing it. Like, it taught me a lot of how games work under the hood. And, you know, of course, being able to fix a lot of the problems that was with the game and just introducing a lot more players to Call to Power, because the Apollotan pack fixed a lot of the problems with Call to Power.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah, and like, it also gave a greater voice for the Call to Power 2 community, because I remember back in those days there was a very heavy Civ 3 versus Call to Power 2 rivalry going on, and you know, I just wanted to try and show to the Civ 3 guys why we actually enjoyed the game so much and preferred it over Civ 3.
Yeah, I remember those flame wars.
Quite fun times.
Yes, indeed.
And in a way, they're still going.
Oh, not so much anymore, but a little bit, yes. Do you still follow the Call to Power community today, even though you're not involved anymore? I mean, what do you think of things like the Source Code Project and Aegis
Map? I do drop in from time to time just to keep an eye on what's going on, especially the Aegis of Man mod. What Stan's been able to do with Call to Power 2 is just amazing. Like, it's a totally new game, and I'd highly recommend anyone to actually try the mod out for them, you know, to see if they enjoy it as well.
Yeah, I'll second that.
And the actual Source Code Project, I looked in on it at the start when the code first came out, but I got too heavily involved with Civ 4 after that, so it basically ate away at my time, and I had, you know, responsibilities in that direction as opposed to the Apollotan edition, so I had to, you know, basically had to drop something.
Yeah,
you
same
all know
here.
What that's like.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What made you move over from modding and stuff to writing your own games?
Basically, what happened was with the Aegis of Man mod that I was writing, I came across the limitations of the Call to Power engine, and it was pretty frustrating because there were things that I wanted to do that I just couldn't do within the bounds of the original engine as it was written by Activision. What I wanted to do...
Yeah, and this was before the Source Code came out. Just for
yeah, exactly. It was about 3 years before the Source Code, and it was not on the horizon at all. So basically what I wanted to do was bring some of the ideas that I had out into the genre and hopefully, you know, bring turn-based games back to the limelight like they used to, you know, 10 years ago. So that was basically why I moved, yeah.
Okay. And you discovered, you developed a game that you first called History of Empires, which you later shortened to just Empires. What were your goals for that project, and did
My
you accomplish
them? My main goal for Empires was to create a turn-based tile game engine with all of its interwoven components. It was the first big coding project that I actually undertook myself, and really the goal was to prove to myself that I could write an entire skeleton for a computer game, you know, including things like the terrain generator, the graphics engine, the actual event system, the font engine, message systems, just everything that goes, all the components that go into the actual workings of an actual game. And I actually achieved pretty much every single goal that I set out to achieve with the game. Sure, it's not finished. I know that. The idea is not dead in my mind, but that particular iteration is.
Time to upgrade the skill set?
Yeah. Basically, it was, because it was an old style of programming that I used for Visual C++ 6. And, of course, at about that time, the actual programming community went through a major change in how they actually coded, and it basically made the code within Empires redundant, so that was another reason why I dropped it. Moving on from old code style onto new code styles, especially with .NET coming out in the next, well, at about the same time.
Yeah, that was a big change indeed. So have you been involved in any other AltSif projects? Obviously Candlebray, but anything else we don't know about?
I was briefly involved with Clash of Civilizations, which has been an ongoing AltSif project for quite a few years now. It was a very minor role, but sorry?
No, a few decades, I wanted to say. Well, it feels like that anyway.
Yeah, it's been around for a long time. My role was very minor. It was more testing some of the code iterations that were coming out from the team and, you know, just getting involved in discussions and providing, like, you know, a bit of design advice and, you know, helping to shape the ideas of the actual game. I also got involved a little bit in creating the tutorials as well, but I think they've pretty much moved on from...
Oh, yeah, I remember that now.
Yeah, but I think they've moved on from those tutorials and created new ones. I'm not 100% sure on that, though.
No, neither am I. Demo 7 was the last one I tried, and that was 3 years ago,
yeah,
I think
that's about the time I was doing them. Yeah. But, definitely Candlebray has been my recent AltSiv project that I've been helping on. I started off working on the code, but due to increasing commitments, that was another of the things that I had to cut from the schedule, especially with getting married and baby on the way. I still drop in on the team, you know, get involved in the forums and the actual discussion going on behind the scenes. And let me say, when some of the actual storyline gets released, whenever that's going to be, all I can say is everyone have a read of it. It is just fantastic.
Okay, that sounds interesting, but I think we'll be talking more about that in a future episode. So, let's see. AltSif games have been around, like we've said, for many, many years, and with the exception of FreeSif, none of them have ever been really completed. Do you think this genre has any real potential? Do you expect any projects to really come from it, to really become complete games? And how do you think Civ 4 affected the future of this genre?
I think the genre has a lot of potential. Like, basically speaking, the turn-based strategies genre has been the primary domain of your grand strategy games, you know, like Civilization, Europa Universalis, like lots of games that basically involve high-level strategy. There is a lot of potential out there for these types of games. Sure, there's a lot of console first-person shooters and arcade games, but they're still the oldies like you and me that, you know, like to sit down and, you know, think for an hour on one turn. impact that Civ 4 has had, I actually believe it's had a positive effect on the genre, especially since they've left the game so open to modding. Like, it's allowing a lot more people out in the gaming world to get to get their hands dirty inside the game and, you know, try and bring fruition to their own ideas. And speaking of ideas, I think that's the major downfall of old Civ games. Like, everyone's got an idea of how they want their Civ game to be, and everyone tries to make their ideas come about, but because everyone's working individually, it just creates the problem that no one has the time to finish a game by themselves. And I think that's why, you know, not 95% of old Civ games just die within a few months of starting.
Yeah, that's a pity. It would be better if people work together more, but often clashing ideas and things like that make that hard.
I think it's common to modding communities and other games too, because you'll have a small group of people or just a couple of people with a great idea or this big, huge idea, but there's not enough experience in what they do to get the whole thing done.
Exactly.
So how exactly did you get involved with Civ 4 and, you know, in the development?
Well, actually, speaking of which, I received a hasty email from you, Locatus, didn't I?
I vaguely remember something like that.
Chasing me up trying to find out where I was, because I'd actually left Apollon there for a while to chase other games at the time, and yeah, received an email from you and basically saying, would I be interested in helping Firaxis with Civ 4? And I think I replied within a couple of hours, yeah, definitely. And yeah, from there it was just the whirlwind of Firaxis development after that.
Yep. So what exactly did you do for Civ 4 prior to the release?
Well, I started out in the testing group, playing the many iterations that was coming out. Well, not so much playing some of them, but trying to make them work.
Yeah.
But yeah, I started out in testing, and then they put a call out to our little group to see if anyone wanted to help with any scenarios, and I put my hand up and said, yeah, you know, I wouldn't mind helping out with the scenarios. And from there, I got involved in designing a scenario for the actual game, which did get released on the actual CD.
Which is, of course, Desert War. So why did you choose the topic for the scenario, World War II North Africa? That's a rather specific topic.
The actual other scenarios within Civ 4 were outside of the modern era scope, and I actually enjoy the modern era the most within Civ 4. So I wanted, and being a bit of a World War II buff.
A bit?
That was probably my main, yeah. That was my main reason for choosing World War II. Now, as for the reason for North Africa, I actually went to Soren and Jesse and said, look, I've got this idea for a scenario. It's based on World War II. And I got the answer back from them, well, the full World War II is a bit large in scope, considering we've only got 3 months to make the scenario. How about we try and cut down the scope? And that was when I thought, well, the Eastern Front and the Western Front get absolutely flogged in every war game, but no one ever really concentrates on North Africa, which was actually, there was quite a lot of interesting battles down in that region. So, yeah, that was why I chose North Africa.
Yeah, I'm not a big World War II fan myself, but as far as that goes, I do agree that North Africa was a nice original topic. Mm. I liked seeing that and also working on it with you.
Yes. And you did all the part.
Yeah, from the player side, it was also nice too to see something like, oh, World War II. Hey, wait. Hey, not in the middle of Europe. Oh. You know, it was nice from a player's point of view to actually see something different too.
Exactly, because there's a lot of games out at the, like, have been out in the last 12, 18 months that concentrated a lot on the Eastern or Western Front. Even down to first-person shooters with Allied Assault, you know, it's all literally the Western Front. I just wanted to do something original that hadn't really been concentrated on within the industry too much.
So how did you go about designing that? You know, how did you start with that, and how do you think it turned out?
I had a bit of a picture in my mind of how World War II played out, and what I did was basically using Google and a lot of history sites formulated a full timeline between the start of the North African War and when the actual Allies were marching through Rome. And from the actual real history, I was able to see a pattern throughout the timeline of three separate eras, and that was basically of the German dominance within North Africa, and then, you know, the Allied push of the Germans back towards Tripoli, and then finally the American assault on Italy itself. And basically the design revolves around those three separate eras, and a lot of the events are actually based around those. I also wanted to bring in a bit of alternate history within the scenario as well, because, you know, what if the Germans had have made it to Cairo and the oil fields of the Sinai, you know? And I wanted to bring in a few events like that and be able to reward the Axis player for being able to play well. Like, for instance, if the Germans push all the way through Egypt and into the Middle East, you know, quite fast, then basically England will lose all ability to create anything with oil, because basically England was getting all their oil from the Middle East, and if Germany had have occupied it, then, you know, they wouldn't have been getting the oil from there for their aeroplanes and ships and tanks. And that was basically how the design evolved, and with discussions with everyone else within the scenario group as well, basically all the units just fell into place, the abilities of each nation, you know, meaning that Italy's forces were weaker, but Germany was the strongest. And also a lot of the evolving build lists as well, like, for instance, the Americans starting out with hardly anything are actually based on actual events within history. I think the actual scenario worked out really well. It did follow the design guidelines that I wanted pretty much to the letter. However, I do feel that we were a bit rushed on time, and if we had have had another 2 months, that the scenario would have been about 200% better. Like, there's a couple of niggling issues that I agree with other people on the forums that are impacting on the mod to be, you know, to go from that good mod to a great mod.
Yeah, what are some of these issues? Can you give one
of the
examples?
Biggest issues, as I see it, is that the German player, if you play it in a certain way, is invincible. And on the other side too, the US player, if you play it a certain way, then you'll just get destroyed completely.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with getting destroyed completely.
Exactly, and especially with Vichy France, I had a lot of problems actually trying to create a balance for Vichy France, because traditionally they were extremely weak, but they were able to hold off the English long enough until the Americans came. And it was really hard within the scope of Civ, with the engine of Civ 4, to be able to create that type of scenario and situation within the scenario itself. So basically what happens is Vichy France at the moment, if it gets to a certain point within the game, it just gets too strong and the American players just never be able to pull off the invasion of North Africa that occurs about two-thirds of the way through the scenario.
Yeah, that's true. I remember playtesting. tried a lot of different options there, yeah. We did indeed just run out of time at the end.
Yeah. And also we had a lot of problems with the ever-changing engine underneath it as well, with all the patches that were being, well, the beta patches that were being updated by Fraxis, well, at the end almost, you know, every second day. Yeah, that caused a few issues for us as well.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, with the weekly patches, we were spending 5 days trying to get it work and 2 days actually making the scenario.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, that was the first half of our interview with Dale. In our next episode, you can listen to the second part, in which Dale gives his opinion on Civilization IV, discusses his post-release involvement with the game, such as his combat mod, Age of Discovery scenario, and Warlords testing, and he explains what he'd like to see in future expansions and in Civ 5, and tells us what other games he plays and how he's been trying to break in the game industry. But that's all for later. For now, back to Dan. Behemoth, those the peasants now, they'll keep
Welcome to the mailbag. John writes, I purchased Civ 4 via the internet about 4 months ago. Recently, my PC crashed and I lost all of my data. I had backed up the downloaded file, but I do not have my activation code. I believe I registered with this email address, although I may have used my Gmail account. Okay, John, lesson number one. Back up your data so you can restore it after a crash. And then you don't have to bother us. No, you're not really bothering us. It's okay.
Well, he did say he had backed up the downloaded file.
Yes, but he doesn't have his activation code. I mean, I guess he could try to email, I don't know, the person or the site where he bought it from.
Whatever service he downloaded from, that would be the most likely to have it.
Yeah, so John, like, did you purchase the game from, say, Direct to Drive as a downloadable item? If for Direct to Drive, there is online self-support and request online support directly. To obtain your password, go to login.directtodrive.com and click I forgot my password. You're welcome. If you want to give us credit when you play Civ 4, name your capital Apollaton and send us a screenshot.
You don't have to, because there's already a Greek city with the name Apollaton.
Well, that was in Civ 3. I don't know. Is that in Civ 4 too?
It's in Civ 4.
Is it? Yeah. Did they move it up on the list of Greek cities? Because, you know, Polton was last on the Greek city list. I think we can move up a little, right? I mean,
no.
You know, like Athens, Sparta, come on. Apollaton. Everybody knows.
Well, I'll see what I can do.
Brooks writes, I'm a newbie. Hope you might help with a quick question. In Civilization III City View, what does it mean when my cursor changes to a brown box with the letter C in it? What can I do at this point?
It's the Civilopedia cursor. Move it over anything and you can click on it and we'll give you the Civilopedia entry for that thing. You know, like you can, like if something's in the build box, you can mouse over there and see what that building does. Or if you look at that, what are all those little shiny gold things?
Where? Oh, stop that!
I'm sorry, I just had to. It's meant for you to hover over stuff. It's like a question mark in other games for help. Just click like that, you hover over it, click, oh, that's what that is.
Finally, from Jason. I'm playing Civ 1 at SNES and my tray reams keep getting lost at sea. Is building a lighthouse prevent that? Because that works in Civ 2. The answer, Jason, no. As in Civ 2, the Lighthouse Wanderer does add the plus one movement effect to naval units. Only in Civ 2 was allowing them to move across open ocean without fear of being lost added. Sorry. Don't hit me!
It follows the old Civ 1 rules, which means if you push it out there, maybe you'll get across, maybe you won't.
If you have any questions for us, you can send them to, what was it, Dan?
Polycast@apollaton.net. That's PolyCast at apollaton.net.
And if you really want to humor us, send us a voicemail, and we will play it on the air.
Reach us through our Skype account, the Polycast, by using Skype yourself. The call is free. Download Skype from skype.com, skype.com. You can also phone us if you prefer. In North America, call 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, call 44-20-7871-7659. That's 44-20-7871-POLY. No profanity or hate mail, please. Well, thanks everyone for listening to our first episode this week. We'll be back in another couple of weeks. And I know some people might be confused about the name of the show, Polycast. Well, we have this mascot, and she was flying around, and she wasn't paying attention, and we had to take her to the vet, and now Polly has a cast. The poor bird.
Did you actually take time to think of that one up? Because...
Yes, he did. He spent all week thinking that up.
Not all week, but...
Okay. 6 days.
Oh, about 6 minutes. Polly, do you want to say something? No. No, you just want a cracker? Ah, too bad, never mind.
Polly want a cracker.
Polly want a cast?
Dan want a cracker?
Is it shiny?
I hope not. You put metal in your cracker. Eat up, Dan.
We
shiny.
How about some sprinkles?
Those are for cupcakes, not crackers.
I don't see anywhere on the sprinkle box where it says they cannot be used on crackers.
This polycast has taken a weird turn.
It wasn't weird from the beginning.
So, folks, once again, thank you for listening to the first episode of Polycast, the official podcast of a Appleton Civilization site at appleton.net. I would like to thank my co-hosts, Mackie. Hello, goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Look at this.
Bye-bye.
Back to prawn. Or just more of it.
Completely prawn.
And last but not least, Imran. Bye-bye.
Happy sibbing.
Is there any other kind of sibbing? There is, I don't know.
I don't know, the type
yes,
that you
there is.
It's very wrong, and you should stop.
You saying you should stop playing to win?
Well, for Dan, perhaps.
Record date October 14th, 2006. Edited by Daniel Dank You Quick. Soundtrack courtesy Civilization IV and the Warlords Expansion Pack. Copyright 2006, Appleton Civilization site at appleton.net.